ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are reading Canto 10, Chapter 13, and the text for today is 20, which you can chant responsibly. Sayam Atmatma Govatsan. The second word is not spelled correctly. It's all right, you can correct now, just carry on. Atma, tma. So there's a T that's after Atma and then T. Prativaryatma vatsapai kridana atma viharaischa sarvatma pravishat rajam svayam atmatma govatsan Pratishvari Atma Vatsapai Kritan Atma Vihara Shcha Sarvatma Pravisat Vrajam Svayam Atmatma Govatsan Prativaryatma vatsapai Kridanatma viharaischa Sarvatma pravisat vrajam Please chant. Svayam atmatma govatsan Pravivaryatma vatsapai Kridan atma viharaischa Sarvatma pravasad vrajan Svayam atmatma govatsan Pravivaryatma vatsapai Kridan atma viharaischa Sarvatma pravisad vrajam Svayam atmatma govatsan Pravivaryatma vatsapai Kridan atma viharaischa Sarvatma pravisat vrajan The word for word Svayam atma Krishna who is personally the supreme soul, the super soul Atma govatsan expanded into calves that were also he himself. Prativarya Atma Vatsapai. Again, he himself was represented as the cowherd boys controlling and commanding the calves. Done, thus himself contributing everything, constituting everything, in these transcendental pastimes. Atma Vaharai Cha, enjoying himself by himself in different ways. Sarva Atma, the super soul, Krishna. Pravisat, entered. Rajam, Rajabhumi, the land of Maharaj Nanda and Yasoda. Translation. Now expanding himself so as to appear as all the calves and cowherd boys, all of them as they were, and at the same time appear as their leader, Krishna entered Vrajabhumi, the land of his father Nanda Maharaj, just as he usually did while enjoying their company. Purport, my Srila Prabhupada. Krishna usually stayed in the forest and pasturing ground, taking care of the calves and cows with his associates, the cowherd boys. Now that the original group had been taken away by Brahma, Krishna himself assumed the forms of every member of the group without anyone's knowledge, even the knowledge of Baladev, and continued the usual program. He was ordering his friends to do this and that, and he was controlling the calves and going into the forest to search for them when they went astray, allured by new grass. But these calves and boys were he himself. This was Krishna's inconceivable potency. As explained by Srila Jiva Goswami, Radha Krishna Pranaya Viktrir Bladini Shaktir Asmat. Radha and Krishna are the same Krishna. By expanding his pleasure potency, becomes Radharani. The same pleasure potency, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, was expanded by Krishna when he himself became all the calves and boys and enjoyed transcendental bliss in Vrajabhumi. This was done by the Yoga Maya potency and was inconceivable to persons under the potency of Mahamaya. Om Agyanati Mrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimata Rama Padaswami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. From the purport, we see that Srila Prabhupada gives the reason for Krishna having assumed the form of every member of the group, meaning that group was comprised of the calves, the cows, and the Cowherd Boys. So every member of the original group had been taken away by Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna himself assumed the form of every member of the group without anyone's knowledge, even the knowledge of Baladev, and continued his usual program. I was smiling when I saw the Srila Prabhupada use the term usual program. And you know, it's so interesting because the same terminology is used by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. he also uses the word program. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that there are actually five verses. That means this verse and leading up to text 25. All of those verses are ones which describe how Krishna continued his usual program. So we get a description. So that program, being one of his enjoying pastimes in the morning, noon and evening, in the village exactly as before. So the first verse of these five verses, which is the one that we're looking at today, he's described, or there's a description of how he continued his usual program. And here it is. The all-knowing Lord then employed his spiritual energy to expand himself into the exact forms of each one of the missing calves and boys. Krishna miraculously appeared with all their attributes, including their individual moods, mannerisms, their dress, ornaments, and carrying sticks. So it's precise, the arrangement of the ornaments is exact, internal mood of the particular personality was exact, and then Krishna proceeded playing his sweet flute. He gradually proceeded home to Vrindavan. So there's this huge change that's just taken place. All the original cowherd boys, calves and calves are no longer there, and Krishna replaces them. So, and he proceeds with the whole retinue back to Vrindavan. So this verse here is stating, now expanding himself so as to appear as all the calves and cowherd boys, all of them as they were, and at the same time appear as their leader, Krishna entered Vrajabhumi. So there's a description of Krishna appearing as the leader. And this description is given by Srila Prabhupada. He was ordering his friends to do this and that, and he was controlling the calves and going into the forest to search for them when they went astray, allured by the new grass. But these calves and boys were he himself. So quite extraordinary that the mood, the natural behavior, the whole being is functioning in the normal way, but it's Krishna himself. Very extraordinary. I mean, you know, one can imagine replicas of persons, but to have it precise and exact, and they're free to perform the activities they normally perform, very extraordinary. So the question raised by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is the following. How did Krishna, so this is the question that's asked, how did Krishna, the soul of all, enter Vraja? So it seems almost rhetorical, how did he enter Vraja? so in some sense, this question of Krishna can be examined through some known facts about him. So the Supreme Lord, and this is, he directly creates everything in this universe. He is the only cause and effect of all actions in this world. So two generalizations about Krishna. So we're going to look at to understand something of Krishna and how it is that he's entering Raja. So these two generalizations are there. He's directly creating everything in this universe. And he's the only cause and effect of all actions in this world. So everything's completely under his control. Both in terms of the creation, causing something, and the effect of that cause. So very interesting. So in Bhagavad Gita, we see that Arjuna, he is also seeing Krishna in this way. As the cause of all causes, he states it. O great one, greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator. And in Arjuna's case, he says, and this has implications later on because of even his referencing Brahma, why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? O limitless one, God of all gods, refuge of this universe, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. So that's from 1137. And that verse is, Kasmak chakte ma nameran mahatman manam agrayase brahmanopi adikartre ananta devesha jagan nivasha tvam aksharam sadasat tat paramam yat. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Arjuna addresses Krishna as Mahatma, which means he's very magnanimous and he's unlimited. Ananta, which is another word he uses for describing Lord Krishna, it indicates that there's nothing which is not covered by the influence of the energy of the Supreme Lord. He also uses the word devesha, which means that he's a controller of all the demigods and is above them all. And he is in fact the shelter of the whole universe. So everything's encapsulated in this understanding of Arjuna, and it has implications for this understanding one can have just visualizing Krishna with a whole retinue of calves, cows, and cowherd boys that are replicas of those originals, but considering that he's the one who's creating, he's the cause of everything, so even the cause of the originals having been removed, that was orchestrated by Krishna, and the fact that he's able to perfectly replicate those originals, then proceeding into Rajabhumi, that whole understanding just comes from understanding that particularly these two generalizations about Krishna, which come from Srila Kavikar Napura, the Supreme Lord directly creates everything in this universe. He's the only cause and effect of all actions in this world. Then it makes it quite understandable that this is possible for him to do. Now, these generalizations that have been made by Srila Kavikar Napurna are borne out. Krishna being the cause and effect of all. He entered, so answering the question that was raised by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, how did Krishna, the soul of all souls, enter Vraja? He entered as Svayam Atma. So Krishna, who's personally the supreme soul, the super soul. That is, he entered as himself, the subject, and brought back the calves, who were the object. And they were also himself, means Atma Gavat Son, which was used in this particular verse. So this ability of the Lord to be himself and the calves is explained through a simile. And this simile comes from Srimad Bhagavatam. The Lord as super soul pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. So just understanding that particular concept of Krishna functioning as super soul gives insight into why all the mannerisms, behavior, and functioning of every entity, especially this replication of the cowherd boys, calves, and calves, is so precise and exact. He actually permeates every living being. So that's from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.32, that description of the Lord as super soul. So this is answering or attempting to answer that question asked by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. So in fact, the Lord is expanding himself all over the universe, all over this material world, by one of his full and complete and absolute parts of himself. And he, his existence can be perceived. That's the interesting thing. So it's not merely theoretical, all of this. And Srila Prabhupada gives examples how it's possible to perceive this. So, you know, these facts can be borne out. So there's different Paramatma features of the Lord, and in the form of matter and in the form of protons, neutrons, etc. So actually he's perceptible. I mean, these are microscopic, what would one say, elements. And I recall when I was doing physics at university, you know, you spend so much time making 3D models of protons, neutrons, electrons, and how everything's functioning. But in actual fact, these are microscopic things, but the purpose of all those models is to show movement. So that animation that is actually evidence of the presence of Supersoul. So naturally, from a theistic point of view, it then makes it perfectly understandable. From an atheistic point of view, I don't have perfect recall of physics because it was not my favorite topic or subject matter. But at least movement was attributed to charges. So something had a particular charge and it had a magnetic attraction to something else. So it was all, you know, usage of words and indicating energy. But again, there's not the understanding of what the source of the energy is. It's just energy is there and it's interacting. So in fact, it's matter, and Srila Prabhupada says even antimatter has this effect of Paramatma, this Paramatma feature of the Lord. So antimatter, it's a form of matter in which the constituent parts are in reverse of that that's present in our universe. So one could say that, I mean, if it's not exact, but if one were to say that the calves and cows and cowherd boys, they're also indicating this presence of super soul. And we, just by hearing this description, particularly this verse where Krishna is performing this function and entering Vrajabhumi as super soul, because these are all present, with him having permeated those forms as super soul, we can comprehend it just through hearing about it. And the presence of Krishna is even felt just by hearing of this transcendental subject matter. So one doesn't even need to, you know, microscopically look at electrons and protons and see their movement and then apply one's theistic understanding that this is the presence of Paramatma. Just by us hearing, simply discussing this this description, particularly in this verse, that not exclusively limited to this verse naturally, it actually allows that perception of the Supreme Soul or Paramatma or Krishna through the hearing and chanting. So one can in fact say that all living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities appear to be separated, and they sort of strewn about this material world. Like sometimes there's statistics given on, you know, what population density is in particular countries, and just looking at it as, you know, living entities being strewn over the world, in order to, you know, just keep the focus on the fact that it's not, you know, a random throw, or these electrons and protons aren't, you know, randomly, you know, just being caught up in some charges or repulsions. One understands that actually the Lord is accompanying the living beings that are throughout this world, because he's actually guiding them, just in the same way that he's guiding those protons and neutrons. And he's even guiding persons in material enjoyment, because he's accompanying them as Paramatma. So those calves that are straying into the forest that Krishna's just replicated, they're being guided, you know, as Paramatma. He knows what calves are drawn to, you know, the fresh grass. So Krishna's guiding even enjoyment in the form of Paramatma. And there's, again, drawing from Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, in the second chapter, the 31st verse, there's this description. After creating the material substance, the Lord expands himself and enters into it. And although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he's always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. So still that separateness, that he's still existing there despite all these expansions. So hence he's entering Vraja as Krishna, and here are these replicas that are super soul guiding all of them, as super soul almost manifest in the form of calves and cows and cowherd boys. An example is given by Krishna in his own words, "I'm the super soul, O Arjuna." So he states it directly. So that transcendental position of Krishna's is such that Krishna expands himself to become all the boys and calves through his transcendental potency. Even in material objects, he does this. So it's not the material energy which is the cause of creation, but rather the total material energy. Begins from a certain spot, and that's Lord Vishnu. And it's Lord Vishnu who's expanding into the creation, the Mahatattva, and then when Mahavishnu enters into the universe, or the universes that have manifested, he then manifests himself as super soul. So there's we know what the source of animation is. And here's Krishna's statement about it, Bhagavad Gita 10:20. I am the super soul, O Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. So without the spiritual spark, the body cannot even develop. Continuing to answer Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's question, Krishna, he brought back the calves as objects who were also him, along with the cowherd boys, the means who were himself. Atma Vatsapai is the term that was used. And all the other boys could be also considered to be himself. So this is some attempt at breaking down and how the question that's been raised by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Krishna would sit, and this is a more elaborate description coming from Srila Kavi Karnapura. He would sit on the bank of the river and eat. The calves would herd in the green meadows, and Krishna would wander from forest to forest searching for the calves. It was Krishna's pleasure potency by which he expanded himself to become the calves and boys and enjoy transcendental bliss. Srila Prabhupada states in the last sentence of the purport that the yoga maya potency is inconceivable to persons who are under the potency of mahamaya, so the illusory energy. So just as Arjuna is calling for one to bow down to the Supreme Lord, so too we find, and I'm including this because it has relevance to what's coming up, Brahma, when he was addressing Narada, he said, and these are Brahma, this is Brahma talking, having this kind of understanding too. So he's talking to Narada, who had raised a question about the identity of Lord Brahma. And so Lord Brahma is responding. So he says, whatever you have spoken about me is not false, because unless and until one is aware of the personality of Godhead, who's the ultimate truth beyond me, one is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. So Brahma is reflecting on himself, and he's reflecting how even everybody else could be illusioned, thinking that he's the greatest because of his extraordinary activities of creation. But that one, until one becomes aware of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one might think Brahma is the greatest, he himself is the greatest. And this is him talking to Narada. So, as Srila Prabhupada puts it, the Supreme Lord is always the Supreme Lord. And if, no living being can claim to be one with the Supreme Lord. It's just not possible. Lord Krishna is... has a different identity in all circumstances, and any living being can never be equal to him. And this is one circumstance where we see how Krishna took on different identities very graphically by his own volition. So he expands himself by innumerable forms, and such expansions are made possible by his various energies. So these are all mystical energies. His energies are many. The word is used that one doesn't find in common usage, multifarious, numerous energies. And his internal energy is superior, while his external energy is considered inferior. So the expansion which takes place by the internal energy, that's, those expansions are considered to be superior forms. And those which take place by the external energy, those are considered to be inferior forms. So one can understand this. The fact that the cowherd boys, the calves and the cows were expansions of Krishna, that they can be considered to be so perfect because of Krishna acting as super soul and he himself entering Vraja as super soul. So all it's like super soul is accompanying the super soul. In our particular case, because I pointed to how one can get to have this factual perception of the presence of super soul, even by just hearing about Krishna. In our particular case, there's a necessity to try and change the quality of the influence that's acting upon us. So hence, we are attempting to cultivate spiritual energy. So hence that necessity to be exposing oneself to hearing about Krishna's particularly extraordinary control and permeation of the universe, permeation of living beings, and his guidance of all living beings. So this is an attempt to just look at this verse a little bit, if there's any thought on the matter.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the very thorough class. I was thinking, when you were speaking about Krishna's action as the super soul in this verse and in this pastime, I was wondering that in Vraja, how active is this principle? Obviously, in this pastime, it's very active because, and we hear that actually many forms of Vasudev manifested as each cowherd boy. That's the way Krishna, because Vasudeva is the super soul in the material world, or he expands, Baladeva expands as the different Vishnus, and like that, and actually many of those forms came and manifested as each individual cowherd boy, and that's what's revealed to Brahma later. But then I was wondering how prevalent is this action actually in Vraj, and how active is Krishna's ability as super soul for the Vrajvasis, because we hear that Krishna is Sarvagya, he's all-knowing, but then one of the most prevalent moods, or I guess mood isn't the right word, but the most prevalent symptoms or characteristics, attributes of Krishna is that he's Mugdhata, that he doesn't know that he is God while he's in Vraj. So it just brought this question to mind, that how often is he acting as super soul for the Vrajvasis? I was wondering if you have any insight.
So the understanding of super soul is that Krishna is actually guiding. So in the case of the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi, your question is trying to ascertain to what extent is he actually guiding each of those residents of Vrajabhumi in their particular actions. And the answer is that completely, because there are in such a state of pure existence that there's no discrepancy between Krishna's desire and their desire. It's one and the same. So, therefore, way back we read that he actually could very easily sit in the whirl of the lotus, and each and every cowherd boy had the understanding that he was having a personal connection with Lord Krishna, and that Krishna was personally looking at him. So if one takes it that Krishna is seated in the center, it means that those behind him, because everybody's seated in a whirl, means in a circular fashion, means that those behind him are actually seeing Krishna's back. But you don't hear that. You hear that each and every individual in that whirl, and I mean there's 900,000 cows, so let's say there's some half that amount of cowherd boys, or a quarter of those cowherd boys, so even if it's 250,000 cowherd boys, 100, and you know, however you're arranging that, maybe there's 125,000 on this side that might have difficulty to see the front of Krishna. But nobody had that experience that they were not directly connected to him and seeing his beautiful form. You don't read that somebody's seen his back. So that is because the that state of pure existence is such that one is completely intimately connected with Krishna at each and every single moment. So one is seeing Krishna continuously. There's no pause. And not only that, but the desires that one has are directly what Krishna is desiring. So in this particular case, it seems like, you know, here he's expanding into these different cowherd boys, calves and cows, so and he's replicating the originals. In actual fact, those originals are completely in tune with him, so that's why he has the perfect understanding of where they would where an ornament would have been worn, which particular stick would be placed in which particular position, what their particular mood is. There's no separation, and yet they're individuals, because Krishna eternally remains, you know, transcendently whole and perfect, a perfect complete being. But every individual entity generally is being guided by him, even in their material enjoyment. But here you have beings that are one with his desire. Yeah, so that's an attempt to explain.
Thank you.
For your question.
Hare Krishna Masaji, thank you for your class. I'm glad he went, because I didn't have anything to contribute when he, so I think Krishna, I was hoping somebody went before me, so, but they gave me some time to formulate some, maybe some points you could expand on. We hear that Krishna is Atmaran, self-satisfied. He never gets lonely. He doesn't need a girlfriend, or a wife, or a friend to be happy. And we see this in his pastime. He expanded himself. I don't need anyone. So in our devotional life, it's described that we should also be content. I'm a Ram in the sense that our happiness is only coming from Krishna, and not from any enjoyment, bhuti or muti. Krishna bhakti nishkama ata eva sham, bhuti muti siddhi kami sakaliya sham. Lord Chaitanya told this verse to Rupa Goswami that, our happiness, anyone whose happiness only comes from Krishna, is always shanta, peaceful. And if our happiness is coming from anything, from anywhere else, then we're always unpeaceful. And the reason I appreciate this verse is because we maybe have a lot of followers or a lot of honor,
but you can't really tell whether you're really content, whether you're connected to Krishna when somebody else receives more honor. Then you can see whether you're just connected to Krishna or when things don't go your way. So my question is that since we're conditioned souls, we're generally dishonest. So sometimes we may put on the show of I'm self-satisfied. My happiness is only coming from Krishna. And what are some steps we could take, you know, to be humble? Like, Krishna, I do actually, I'm not self-satisfied, but that's actually okay. I need the devotee association devotees. I'm not going to put on a, not going to be pretentious. I need some help. And so a lot of times in our spiritual life, nobody likes to feel like they're helpless. Like if you go to, if you need food stamps, you go to the homeless shelter. If you need to borrow some money, you know, that's very embarrassing. But we see that Prabhupada, when he came to America, in his Jaladutta prayers, in the end of his prayers, he identified himself as insignificant beggar. And so naturally, we may artificially say this, but what are some steps we could do to give up this embarrassment that actually I do need help? I'm not Amara, I'm not self-satisfied. Krishna, can you send me some help? And a lot of times, so what are some steps we could do get over this this embarrassing tendency that we need help, not with money, but just with our problems in general? I don't want people to know that I'm not self-realized, or they may criticize like you're a rascal. So maybe you could expand on this.
Well, the position of helplessness is a commendable position because it's factual. the more one feels oneself helpless in front of the deities, the more one feels the the horror of existence in the material world, one's more aware of all the terrible blockages that exist in the mind, all the learned patterns. One is aware of all the desires that you know, are just below the surface, and it's all in one form. And somehow one has to at the same time try to elevate one's consciousness. So the only shelter for trying to elevate one's consciousness is Krishna and the devotees. So if one actually is genuinely thinking, I need help, it's a huge step forward in having access to functioning on a spiritual plane and under the protection of Krishna, and not being subject to one's way of being according to the tendencies in the mind and the learned patterns in the mind. So it's a highly commendable position to acknowledge that, you know, to move forward, to step away from all these shackles of the mind, one wants the help of Krishna, one knows that this is he's the supreme shelter. So choosing to look to Krishna, choosing to look to his devotees that way is a huge step for breaking free of all these very uncomfortable, very painful patterns that bind one. So looking at it from a practical point of view, it's more difficult to see oneself helpless in the face of devotees. It's easier in front of one's spiritual master, because one is aware that here is a very extraordinary being that is giving shelter to one. So it's natural, just in the presence of the spiritual master, one feels helpless. It's natural because one sees how small and paltry one is, lacking in the magnanimity of the spiritual master, lacking in the kindness that's coming from the spiritual master. Just being in his presence, it's easy to feel helpless. Now, in terms of other devotees, perhaps how one's viewing other devotees gets colored by all those patterns in one's mind, and that's a danger. But if one constantly remembers that these are persons who are on the path of self-realization, and they're actually are dedicating their lives to try and serve Krishna and those persons, well, all of humanity, because that's the role of a Vaishnava, one naturally is going to always feel some respect, and maybe one doesn't feel helpless in front of them, but there's one pauses whatever is there in the mind. One puts a brake on that. So just putting a brake on that, one may not be able to feel helpless in front of devotees, but putting a brake on the mind puts one in the correct space to be able to receive assistance. So just remembering that it doesn't matter what level a devotee's on, it's irrelevant. It all has to do with, this is a being who's there ready to make whatever sacrifice to serve humanity at large, to serve the Supreme Lord, serve the spiritual master. It's a very, it requires so much strength and dedication and determination to proceed on this path. So just remembering that these are persons who've actually taken those steps and are proceeding on that path, it will allow you to then have the right mood to receive help. So it doesn't even have to be stated what it is one needs. The beauty of devotees is the because they're carrying Krishna within their hearts and cultivating a service mood, they're very attuned always to what it is that another individual may need. Very attuned. One never has to go through any embarrassing statement. I mean, one is often embarrassed because one's spiritual master sees right into one's heart, and whatever is amiss is stated and it's taken care of, and one is can feel extremely embarrassed by whatever it is that God exposed. In the case of devotees, you don't have to verbally embarrass yourself, but the proper care will be given to you automatically. Some thoughts.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer, because that was going to be my second question. I'll keep it short, because a lot of times my question was, and there's a nice answer from the Bhagavad Gita confirming your statement. Unfortunately, I couldn't find it. It's in the beginning of this canto, the 10th canto, where you don't have to necessarily state your problems to get help, because the super soul knows everything, and he sends a tweet to other devotees or a text. They need help, so he's the original, you know, tweeter, if you could argue, or texter. And there's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita in this canto. I tried to look for it before you finished your answer. It basically says that three types of people benefit from the Bhagavad Gita. And this goes to what Prabhu said yesterday, just being in association of devotees, you'll get your help that you need. So this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, I forgot which verse, I marked it down at home, but it says three types of people benefit. Those who give class, like Mother Krishna Arjuna, those who hear class, like Us Fortunate Self, and those who inquire about class, and those who just sit in class and just submissively listen. But my question is essentially regarding this, is that of course, we usually, when we're in class, our body is in class, but our mind is class. But this verse mentions probably our mind should be in class too. That's one aspect. But my real question is that I do sincerely feel from these verses and from these that we will get help. We don't have to expose our problems. The problem is that we're not really careful at exposing others' problem or spreading rumors. So I feel like Christian will, you know, we won't get the help we need because we're committing apparatus. We want to cover our faults, and yeah, we'll get help, but at the same time, will we get help if Krishna sees that we can't control our tongue also, you know? So maybe you could expand on what are some steps we could do to get help by controlling our own tongue and being respectful of others, so.
Well, the ability to control speech, that's present in the most elevated devotees. Well, it's very dangerous to speak ill of any person. Even a regular person, it's very dangerous to speak ill of another person because it feeds all kinds of ugliness within oneself. And if one were to actually go so far as to verbalize thoughts that are negative about persons that are on the path of self-realization, one is certainly getting into very hot water. Because when you start feeding negativity within yourself, you start closing off that channel of entrance into a transcendental space. And so you block yourself from any ability to receive assistance of any kind. You are responsible then for creating that block. So, yeah, it's definitely extremely dangerous to give free rein to the tongue. I mean, yeah, super dangerous. I mean, if one can't control it, best to remove oneself from a room. Like physically take oneself away from a situation if one is knows that there's that difficulty, because it's going to force oneself to take oneself out of the association of devotees. It won't be anybody else doing it, it will be one's own work that will have brought that about. And you know, persons can receive help also depending on their willingness and their trust of others. So there may be trust issues. You know, persons may have trust issues. Or some persons may just be so attached to their own concepts that they're completely closed to anything that may be obvious to devotees. So the willingness of a person to truly take association has a lot to do with their willingness to go past some of the concepts they hold. So, yeah, so those concepts may be a blockage for taking to transcendental understanding. And that's an aside. The main thing was the control of the tongue. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thanks for the class. We never tell ourselves jokes because we know the punchline, so we won't laugh. And when somebody tells us the end of a movie, or we predict it, is not that fun. And you said at the beginning of the class that Krishna is in control of everything, of the cause and the effect. How come he doesn't get bored? He still enjoys creating all this, because he's in control of the past, the present, and for sure the future. So he says, like, okay, I'm going to move this and this and this, but he knows exactly what is going to happen. but he still enjoys it. How does he do that?
Well, it's all operating on the principle of love. So any arrangement is to increase love and loving exchange. So that makes it all extremely beautiful and extremely exciting. The question of boredom is only there with functioning on a material plane, because you have to thud and thud at the same thing in order to try and extract some enjoyment. But on a spiritual plane of loving dealings, it's eternal enjoyment, eternal happiness. I don't think the word boredom exists there. Anyway, thank you very much. It's time to end. Thank you, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.